I'm speaking with Kathleen Sullivan from Tennessee, a survivor of mind control. Thanks very much for joining us on this radio series, Kathleen.
Thanks for inviting me.
How did you become aware that you were being used or under the influence of mind control?
I'm going to backtrack just a little bit to fit all this in. I first started realizing that I did not have a lot of memories from my childhood and from my adult years, and I also was learning that I did not have an awareness of most of my emotions back in summer of 1990 when I went to a place called Crossroads of Chattanooga, Tennessee. It was a codependency treatment program that I entered because my daughter had been arrested for some serious charges, and they wanted me to get some extra help because they figured it was probably family generational. And I started remembering that I had been sexually abused by my father at home, as had several other siblings. And I went home and started telling the authorities and was preparing to testify against him. And I started realizing that he was not the man I thought he was, that I had a real fantasy about who he was as my father. When that started to break, I started to have a lot of abreactions, which was like physical memories paired with emotional memories of having been tortured by him at home and also used in voyeurism-type sexual acts with him as a child. He was suicided in January of 1990. I was made to watch. When that happened, I totally shut down inside and became very robotic, very out of touch with my emotions, and I entered a hospital in Atlanta and went in another treatment program there, they called it Intensive Experiential Track, which was a more legal name as far as insurance companies go for codependency treatment again. I started having more memories of other types of trauma I had been through. Got out of that, then I started having ritual abuse memories, and I'm finding out this is usually a normal process. You'll remember the sexual abuse first, then the ritual abuse, then the other stuff finally comes up. I went in another hospital in 91, summer of 91, out in Dallas, and that's where I finally began to accept what I was beginning to remember, and that's that I had been programmed by the government, U.S. government, to be used to be an assassin as well as to do some other jobs for them. It was a very difficult time for me because I was absolutely terrified that, as I remembered, I was going to be killed. And I also was having a problem in the hospital with being homicidal towards the people there, nurses and staff. And it was a real interesting couple of months for all of us, I think. I started learning that I had many, many, many other personalities and fragments of my original personality. Each one had a name or a code number or a code name. And I've been working at it ever since. It's been a real interesting experience so far.
Did you initially, did something trigger your memories initially? And did they start coming before your father had died?
Yeah, they did. When I was in Crossroads, being physically safe, probably for the first time in my life, at that place, I was not even allowed to accept phone calls or cards from relatives. And they did that because when they did that type of codependency treatment, they wanted the patients to focus solely on their own stuff that was inside and not be taken away mentally or emotionally from the recovery work they were doing. So it was a really important month for me there. Plus, as I started to remember, and it's really neat because nobody put it in my head. In fact, I kept telling all the staff there that my dad was a wonderful man, that he was, you know, just, oh gosh, he was just like Norman Rockwell. You can imagine one of them, those pictures. And they kept going, but why are you so shut down emotionally? We had explored maybe it was alcoholism in my family. No. I had no memory of sexual abuse, and I was just trying to figure out what was it, what was causing this in me. And then one time I went to see a Batman movie on PASS with a group from the unit, and that movie for some reason started it. I came back to the unit and just had, oh my gosh, I was just hysterical. I could not stop crying. I had a major headache, which I also learned since then means that some alter personalities are starting to come out. I had this need inside to run away and hide where no one could find me. It was a real tough time, but it was like I was starting to open up there. And I had also had a falling out with my father previous to that, which was a first for me, because my daughter had been arrested, and he was, I think, trying to cover his tracks by making it look like she was crazy or whatever. And so I was also breaking his control of me at the same time. And then by being willing to testify against him, that was breaking his control even further. And then when he was killed, that broke it the rest of the way.
So when you were testifying against your father, this was strictly for the sexual abuse?
Right, because he had three children from a second marriage. And one of them came forward. We have never talked about that, even now. And what I had remembered independently about Dad doing to me and my other siblings in the bathroom when I was a child was identical to what Dad did to this sibling and a younger sibling, well, half-siblings, 30 years later. So it was pretty amazing how he was still doing the same techniques. But that was the beginning of breaking free and remembering for me. I was, before he died, I was having, like, flashbacks 24 hours a day, it seemed, during my dreams and during my waking state. And fortunately, I had some therapists working with me who taught me to journal everything. And I've been journaling ever since, and it's been a big help to me.
And when you were receiving these memories, how did they come back, like in terms of by different senses, or how did your memories come back to you? And
a lot of times I would hear a sound that wasn't in the room, and I recognized that because it wasn't in the room, it was a sound memory starting to come up, or that part of a memory. Sometimes I would hear somebody talking to me, my father or a voice of another person that a lot of times I could recognize from my childhood. Sometimes it would be a certain smell, or a lot of times when I was eating, all of a sudden the food looked extremely unappetizing. I had a lot of physical memories of being raped when nothing was happening physically at that time. It was all body memory. I had a lot of visual memories, and then I started having some very, very recurring dreams that when I started writing them and allowed myself to explore that part of what was coming up in my mind, I would sometimes spend hours and hours, sometimes a half a day, just sitting there writing what came up and reliving it as I wrote, and believe me, that was not fun either. But it was really neat, because even now I can look back at a lot of that stuff and go, wow, yeah, this really did happen. It's been amazing.
So what you're saying, your father was basically carrying out trauma-based conditioning on you.
Right.
And at what point did you become aware that this was being done for the purpose of mind control?
Or that again, was in the summer of 91.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't until I remembered the government connection and remembered that I had been used as an assassin. And understand, this was back before. I'm fortunate on this in a way, because the memories came up and the personalities, alter personalities, came out before I was able to find information about these types of activities. So I was feeling really crazy when that stuff came out. I wanted to believe that I had made it all up. But then I thought, oh my gosh, if I made all this up, or even subconsciously, then I'm really crazy. So it was a real difficult time. But and I went back and forth in denial a lot. But when the information kept coming up and the alter personalities kept coming out very insistently, I realized that I couldn't keep denying it, because if something that serious had been done to me and I had been used to do it, then I was in danger presently. And the more I would accept this stuff and accept these other alter personalities and fuse with them, the better I'd be aware of what was going on around me now.
And how did you go about verifying your memories at the time you started remembering government involvement and being used?
It was very, very, very hard. One of of course, what I tried to do was find information where this had been done to people before. At that time, the information was extremely limited. I did run across John Mark's Manchurian candidate. That helped a little bit. I was able to get a hold of Walter Boerck's original, a copy, Xerox copy of his original Operation Mind Control. And there was a chapter in there about a woman, I believe her code name was Candy.
Candy Jones.
It showed how she had been used to do a lot of the same things, too, even at a place I had already remembered that I knew as of the farm. Well, it was called the farm. It may have been Camp Perry. I have not bothered to try and go there to identify it visually. But a lot of the same techniques I had been remembering, she had mentioned being used on her and through her. One of the things that she had mentioned was cyanide with lipstick. I had been remembering using like a little container of Vaseline with biochemical substances on it and then poking or scratching someone with a pin with that. So there were enough similarities to where I again started to feel sane. At that time, I also was very desperate. I started reading a book called The Man Who Knew Too Much by Richard Russell, and I wrote to him and just shared a little bit of my story, and he did acknowledge that from his understanding, yes, this stuff was still going on, and just hang in there. And so I did a lot of hanging in there. Then I started, well, back in 91, I had remembered five main systems of programming that had been used on me. It came out totally spontaneously. A psychiatrist at the hospital in Dallas simply asked each of the patients in a group, he said, we want you to write down maps of your systems. And I just sat down, and it just came out on paper. It was alpha, beta, delta, theta, and omicron. And no one bothered to explain what all that was. I did not know any other patients there at the time that wrote that specific information down. But I went ahead and explored what this meant in outer space. A lot of it was pure visualization that had been externally put in my mind through hypnosis and other means. And not understanding what any of this really meant, except for what little I could remember at the time, I just kept journaling and documenting it as best as I could. I think it was like back in 93, I had written a letter to Daniel Ryder, who wrote Breaking the Circle of Satanic Ritual Abuse. Mm-hmm. And he had mentioned something in there about governmental mind control. So I wrote him a letter and said, I have these systems of programming, and it looks like I have used as an assassin and some other things. And I just needed to know that other people had at least heard of this so I could still feel relatively sane.
Right. Now, when you say systems of programming, what do you mean by that? And maybe you could explain what each of these are, a few of them are.
I'm not claiming that I understand all of this myself, okay? I think only a programmer can really understand it all. But what they did, and my father, I might add, was my primary programmer from my childhood on. He was a sociopath because of some horrible things he went through in his own childhood that I have found out about. So he had no conscience left at all about anything he did. He was also a pedophile, a person who preferred sex with children. So I got hit on that end pretty hard, too. He was an engineer for AT&T, formerly Western Electric, and he was an absolute genius in what he did for them. He worked a lot with blueprints. He was very scientifically minded, and I think that probably was his self-esteem right there. He loved puzzles, he loved games, and he loved seeing how he could create, how many alter states he could create in one individual. He used me, and he told me a number of times that he was God to me, and for a while I really believed it. He told me that I was his guinea pig, and I do believe that, and that I was his prototype, because as many as he could create in me successfully and document each part of me that he broke off and gave a code name to, that would make him look even better with the CIA, who he mainly was working for.
How would he go about creating it?
He would. There was a number of ways that he did it. He was a true sadist. He even wrote a paper once on Marquis de Sade, I believe it was, or Sade.
Right.
And I found that several years after he died and went, uh-huh, this figures, okay. I guess because of a lot of the pain that he carried inside that he hadn't dealt with from his own childhood, and it was extreme, I could see it sometimes when he would dissociate. He liked to inflict pain on others. And he would sometimes use electrical wires because he was an electrical, mechanical, and chemical engineer. He was, I still have a problem most of all with electricity. I cannot stand being near a bare wire. It'll make me nuts. Even if it's, the electricity is turned off, you can't convince me it's turned off. He used sleep deprivation. He used holding food back. He used rituals extensively. He headed up a small, covert, satanic cult in Reading, Pennsylvania. Very small group, but they brought a lot of kids in for rituals and stuff, and orgies and things like that. That right there did some serious stuff to my head. I was made to participate in ritual sacrifices from the time I was 4 years old. What I'm realizing, and I think it's important for people to realize, that a lot of the stuff may not just be ritual abuse. It may actually be training and conditioning for ops for some people to be used later on, because later on, the implements that were used in those ritual sacrifices, I was able to use in assassinations with absolutely no problem whatsoever. The things I saw in the rituals, and I don't have to get into all that, but anyone working in an emergency room will know what I'm talking about, okay? That also helped me to desensitize later on when I was involved in assassinations. The desensitization, I think, was very important. But what he did, he kept a real close eye on me as much as he could, either in the rituals or at home where he was doing a lot of the torture, basically, that he did to me. And he would... what he'd do is he'd have the main part of me that was known as Kathy at the time be out and present consciously in control of the body. Then he would traumatize that main part of me, the original part of me, until that part simply could not bear the pain or the horror anymore. That part would kind of just go to sleep. I guess that would be self-hypnosis and just totally black out amnesically. Then he would do something else to me to where I had to come back, but I couldn't bear it as Kathy. So he would split off a part, and then he would give that part a name and just really mess with each part's head. That made sense. It's really all one head. But what he did was when parts of me split off that had no memory of the Kathy part of me, those other parts were what he called a clean slate. In other words, they had no memory. And so he could make them believe anything he wanted to. He called it imprinting because it was his, whatever beliefs he chose for those parts to believe, that's what he would imprint them mentally and emotionally with. He did it to a lot of other children. I was not the only one. He was, that was his, one of his specialties was splitting off children's psyches and doing what he called base programming, which was assigning their names and such, and then other people would do more specific programming to them later.
So,
but he chose to try and do more specific programming with me as well, just to show what he could do.
And this base programming is a result of being exposed to trauma.
Absolutely.
To cause dissociation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's many, many different ways that it can happen. Like the beta system of me, the reason I call it system, some people will just have one part that's named beta, okay? And I need to add that there's a lot of MK survivors who do not have this particular programming. They have other types of programs because other people were trying other experimental techniques on them and trying to create other types of alter personalities and programs. My dad was, you know, specializing in this area.
Your dad must have learned these techniques from somewhere. Where do you feel that he was taught? Or it sounds like also your father was a victim of abuse or perhaps mind control as well.
I believe he was. I'm going to have to be kind of general on some of this because there's some things I'm not really safe talking about yet,
mm-hmm.
and I'll say as much as I can comfortably. on the other side of my family, there is some white Russian connections. These are people that are extremely anti-communism. So they were involved in some of this in a more primitive way. Like one of the older male relatives would torture my dad by applying electricity to his many fillings in his teeth. So that person had a great, great influence on what happened to me, my dad, my entire family. That person is unfortunately still alive, or I would name him. He seemed to have... Now, he told me, this person, that he had OSS connections and had been with the OSS during World War II. He seemed to have a lot of connections to politicians in D.C. as well. And to another person who I wish I could name, initials HK, who I learned had actually been involved in bringing over a lot of the Nazi criminal scientists from Germany at the end of World War II and later on. My dad told me that he, my father, had been used as an interpreter with some of these scientists that were brought over by the Army, I think it was combined Army and Air Force back then, I can't remember the name of it, and OSS, which soon became CIA. I thought about this, why my dad became so influenced by those people, if that's true, and I finally realized something a couple weeks ago. My dad had a strong German background, okay? He was growing up in an era where to be a German was just a filthy thing, because Germans were considered the enemies. His mother would play German radio stations at night, but I can see why he had a very, very difficult time, plus he already had low self-esteem, severely so. So I can see now why he might have gotten emotionally close to some of these people if he did interpret for them. He spent a lot of time at different Air Force bases, at least a four-year period in the Air Force. Quite a few bases. It was surprising how many. Later on, he spent a lot of time around people who were, some people call them neo-Nazi, I call them Aryans, people that were involved with Aryan-type organizations and activism and such. So it looks like somebody kind of woke up that part of his sense of having a self-purpose, being important, being special. He became pretty obsessed with Teutonic belief systems. He and some other men that he was close to called themselves Knight Templars. As far as I know, Dad was never in the Masons, although most of the other people I knew were pretty high level. Their meaning for Knight Templar was Germanic assassins. I, as a female, since they were total chauvinists, was not considered a Knight Assassin, but they would call me daughter of Knight Templar. So there was something there. He also went to, Albright College, which is like right outside Reading, Pennsylvania, and graduated from there before he started working for Western Electric, and they had a strong, strong German group there, too. He was in some German clubs and such. So I'm not sure where all the influences came from, but they were pretty strong, and I think it gave him an identity that he was pretty needy for.
As you're probably aware, there's a quite a debate in public about the recovered memories versus false memories. Mm-hmm. How, in your experience, did you feel that a memory was real or not, and what kind of problems are associated with remembering in terms of trying to figure out exactly what happened to you?
For me, it was, and still is, very hard work doing that. One of the things that I learned very fast as I was remembering the op memories was that it looks like every single time, without fail, whenever I completed an op, especially overseas ones, which mostly I did overseas ops for the CIA and another organization as well, when I came back, I would be debriefed, and immediately they would start doing what I call screen memories and scrambles. Screen memories and scrambles can be two different things. Screen memories are where they put an entire separate memory in the mind to that when you start remembering, you'll hit the screen memory first. It is an actual memory in that it did happen, but not physically, usually. What it usually was for me was they would put me in a room where there was a movie projector, or later on they used virtual reality, which made it even worse because there was more of a sense of it being real. Sometimes they would drug me. Sometimes one of my handlers would sit there and be talking to me and narrating and hypnotizing me as I was watching the movie. A lot of times they tried to pick out movies that were had some similarities to what I had just experienced, which means they had prepared for it in advance, I'm assuming. Other times they would use horror movies I have never seen before. They were that bad. I mean, we're talking like X-rated sometimes. And so I would hit those movie memories, and I would just like, what in the heck is this? You know, this makes no sense whatsoever. I would feel really crazy, and then I go, okay, I remember that there was a man sitting to the right of me. I remember that I was sitting a seat. I was looking up at a screen. Aha, this is a movie. And then I go, okay, now, and what I would do and still do is I'll write down the entire thing I remember and who was near me and stuff. From then, I could backtrack or I could go forward from that point. Now, scrambles was more where I would be like with a group of people or with a handler, and they would put me under hypnosis and make me see something out of the whole thing that was real. They would make me see one thing that absolutely was not. Like, and one friend of mine, she would see a kangaroo in a guard shack. You know, I mean, it obviously was not a kangaroo. But that's the kind of things they would do. They also did what my dad really liked for them to do, because it involved all the tactile sensations, which made the false memories seem even more real, was what he called acted out scenarios. And that's where they would go ahead and take the victim, the MK victim, to a location. They would have people scripted just like they were acting on TV or something, and make the person think that that situation actually happened. Sometimes they would even bring in a well-known Hollywood actor here and there, pay them pretty well. I think some of them are probably blackmailed, and I think some of them are also victims themselves. But when a person would remember that stuff, that also would make them feel real crazy to actually remember absolutely an actor that was on TV and such. The other thing that they would do as far as screen memories was a lot of times after all that was done and they were transporting me back home, a lot of times it was through Dobbins Air Force Base, they would transport me to a place in Cobb County, which was where the main cult was that my dad was connected to near the end, and make me participate in a ritual after everything else. So here I would remember, first I'd have to work through a legit ritual memory, then I'd have to work through a screen or scramble or both, then I might be lucky and get to the real memory. And fortunately for me, they were pretty predictable that way, but it took me several years to realize what was happening and why the memories were coming up this way. So in that way, I do think there is a legitimacy to what people talk about false memories, but I do not think of it as people making it up consciously or subconsciously. I consider it to be externally induced false memories.
Mm-hmm.
Let me add one more thing here. Mm-hmm. I was talking to someone the other day. They mentioned how one of the reasons the McMartin case was thrown out was because the kids had mentioned that they were raped by Santa Claus. It was a man dressed up as Santa Claus with the beard. They were telling the truth, okay? But the jury, I believe, found them incredible because of that. Some kids in Cobb County had shared that they had been used in bestiality with lions. That one was real. But again, people could not believe that that happened, and therefore the kids were concerned.